What's up, everybody? How you doing? Welcome back to another episode of Living Life Intently. I'm sitting in an armchair in my living room today, and my name's Lee Frazier.
My name is Jonathan Canary. I'm coming at you from Sydney, Nova Scotia.
So we're doing something that I said that I would never do again, which is an online podcast, but I think we got to figure it out. We got like, we're recording the audio on both sides, so this shouldn't sound at all like it's an online podcast, unless my Wi-Fi messes up and lags.
But we've also changed up the format a little bit because I'm going to be interviewing Lee this week.
Yeah, and we also we reached out to listeners, people through our social media pages, primarily Instagram, for suggestions. So this week we were asking for people to give their suggestions on tips, tricks, advice, whatever for camping, and not any specific genre of camping. If it's like alpine, backcountry, front country, whatever, just kind of anything that you guys would like to know. And we've got a lot of responses, haven't we?
Yeah. I'd just like to, before we jump into the questions and the gear stuff, I'd just like to throw a shout out to Aiden Bailey and Shane Wilkie, who sent me some really well-written, thoughtful messages about the podcast. And, you know, we have people write us all the time, but both of these guys really touched me when they wrote out to me. So I really appreciate that and keep on listening. Yeah. So should we just jump into it, Lee?
Well, I mean, you get all these messages. I don't even hear anything.
I get all kinds of messages. All kinds of fans out there.
I'm joking. I heard from a good buddy of mine this week who was saying him and his wife have been loving it. He actually is one of the guys that gave some tips, for that we'll cover on later. So, shouts out to Chalmers, Blinkhorn. Yeah, he gave me some pointers on endurance. Well, he's an endurance runner, but you know, I was like, how do you stop lactic acid buildup in your legs when you're doing endurance stuff? And he's like, first off, it's not lactic acid buildup, but we'll get into that in just a little bit.
We'll get into that.
Yeah. So how do you want to start this? How are we going to do this?
Well, our first question is from Devin Spencer. Do you need a 4-season tent or will a 3-season suffice if you pile up snow around it?
I mean, we've covered this in this podcast before. I tend to sleep in a hole in the ground. So, I mean, anything's better than a hole in the ground. But as far as like using 3-season tents in the winter, they're completely doable. It is. We've done it many, many times. It's not that it can't be done. It just that a 4-season tent is a little bit more durable, less breathable. It's more of a rugged tent for the most part. It's set up to withstand some pretty nasty conditions, but it all really depends on where you're going and what you're doing with it.
From my experience, like seams and hems are reinforced, pockets are reinforced. There's less room for humidity to build up on the inside, so it's less breathable inside and outside.
Yeah.
And
it also has a lot of usually there's more vestibules, like areas when you put your canopy on your tent, so that you can store a lot of your gear in there, whereas like a lot of summer flies don't technically, like some of them don't have a lot of space in there because you don't technically need it. Like a 4-season tent, like the ones we use for doing the Highlands or the North Face Summit Series tents, and to speak on packing snow, these things actually have snow flaps around the vestibules and on the canopy. So when you put it in the tent, you have these flaps that extend down and you bury them in the snow so no wind can get in underneath your vestibules. I think I'm saying vestibule a lot here. But to answer your question, yeah, three season tents can be used in the winter. And I mean, not only, it all depends on what you're using for your gear too. Like, 4 seasons are a little bit more insulated, I guess, because they're less breathable. whereas Three Seasons generally have a lot of mesh. So it breathes really easily. But then it comes down to what kind of gear you're using in your tent. Are you using like decent enough sleeping bags? Are you layering up sleeping pads, like inflatable ones over foam ones? I know people think that when they come out with us in the wintertime, like Alec and I just use it's one Thermarest. It's a Z-Line, Thermarest Z-Line sole. So they're like the accordion style ones with a like reflective kind of side to it. That's all I use. I think it's like an R value of like 2. And in like cold conditions, you're wanting, I think it's like 5 R value. So normally people put a foam one on and then an inflatable Thermarest or like inflatable pad. And you can get ones that are insulated as well. So but realistically, I mean, I'm so used to doing it the way I've been doing it for years and years and years that I'm comfortable doing it that way. And I don't tend to get cold because I run hot. So it really all depends on the person. There's a lot of things to unpack when you're talking about winter camping. But to answer the question straight up, yeah, you can use Three Seasons tent.
I think I've seen people put a tarp to extend down to bury over their tent and make sure that they set up their Three Season tent amongst trees or something that's going to break some wind. And that'll kind of take some of the load off of the tent and kind of keep some of that wind out.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to make sure that it's breathable too, because like in my tent, so I was just going through all the gear for the trip in about a week and a half where we're doing across the Highlands and just getting everything up. Within the tents that we have, there's a label right at the door that says you can suffocate if you don't have this tent vented properly. So if you don't have, like, it's got vents in the ceiling, it's got vented door, like flaps, all that stuff. But if you have it like, completely sealed up, there is the possibility it's like you could suffocate in this tent. Whereas don't see, if you're using Three Seasons, I don't see that being an issue, but it's always something you got to, you know, think about. You don't want to seal that tent up too tight.
Okay, Gaia's question was, do people really use shit pots?
Yeah, I had no clue what a shit pot was. I had to Google it. So I guess people do. Now that I've seen them, I actually had people on the campground this summer.
Can you explain to everybody what a shit pot is?
It's literally a bucket with a lid on it. It's like a thunder box. If people from Ontario, I think that's what they call. Well, I mean, that's in some of the parks out there. A buddy of mine was telling me all about them. So some of the campsites just have a thunder box. It's just a wooden box with a toilet. What do you call it? Toilet lid, toilet seat on it. But if you Google like, portable toilet camping, whatever I Googled, I think I even Googled shit pot or whatever. You can get collapsible ones that have like plastic bags. You put like little, you're kind of like, think of like doggy poop bags, but for humans, and you put on this bucket and you sit on it and shit in it. That's pretty much what that is. It's no shit rope, let me tell you.
So,
but what do you think about that? Would you ever use one of those?
I would never use one of those. No. I like the idea of the shit rope, which is the boys have developed. I think I froze here. Oh, wait, there.
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay. Yeah, the shit rope is like a rope that loops around a tree and then you put your toilet paper on it and then you hold onto the rope to lean back. And I like that idea because I personally tend to use spruce trees for a toilet when I go out so that I can shred the needles off of it, stick my toilet paper on, and then hold onto the branch. And then I lean back and do my thing. So it's like nature's shit rope, I guess. I would never use a bucket, though. No.
Yeah,
tips and tricks coming up later. I have a tip for this, so...
Interesting.
Yeah,
I've seen them. Like, now that I know what they are, I've definitely seen them. Like, I've seen them on like boats, like sailing boats and stuff like that too, where there's no actual like toilet, like smaller boats, and guys are sailing with this thing and they have this bucket that they normally it's like made out of like a 5-gallon bucket with like a toilet seat like zip tied to it. That's basically it. Or you'll see it like like campsites, people have them in like weird outhouses they don't want. I think one of my buddies and his like tall guy still has like he poops in a bucket still at his house. So, I mean.
I mean, you're not supposed to tell the ladies that, though.
Whatever. Anyways, yeah, no, that was the one thing I didn't really know about. I didn't really see that. But, I mean, it's also for people that are like pack in, pack out, leave no trace, like extreme leave no trace. Like you're picking up your own feces and then hiking that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like a best practice, like, I mean, we obviously don't have this luxury in the winter, but a best practice is if it's the summertime, you always want to bury your excrement.
Yeah. So anybody that's listening that goes to Pollitt's Cove, please do this. I'm pretty sure there's a shovel left in the woods summers that you can use.
And I mean, if you go to a spot that's mossy, it would be really easy to do that with your hands, or anywhere that has like a conifer forest, because the ground is usually really soft with pine needles. Those two areas would be ideal for that, because you can just lift up a tuft, do your thing, and then kick the tuft over it.
Yeah. Okay, what else we got, man? This is fun.
We got a question from Shane Wilkie.
Oh yeah, far away, man. Let's see how we get going.
How to navigate the backcountry when you cannot rely on cell phones?
I think you know one of the top answers for this one, eh?
Yeah. well, I mean, personally, I like to use, I download maps using Canada Topo or a few other apps, but Canada Topo seems to be about the best. And then I'll rely on the GPS on my cell phone. The other way is if you're familiar with the area and you are familiar with a visual picture of the map, you can navigate using, the landscape and natural features.
Yeah.
It's called reading the land. So
land remember reader. That's going on my
land
resume.
Reader. just keeping in mind where waterways are, which way they flow, where the mountain is, where the lowland is, and using those to navigate your way to your desired location.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do that over long distances.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's relatively easy if you're familiar with the map and you keep in mind that you are going to, you know, within 5 to 10K of wherever you need to be.
Yeah, and it really depends, too, if it's like, you know, are you, you know, if you're asking a question, you know, what happens if I'm navigating by my phone and it happens to die and I'm stuck backcountry or whatever? And like where we live here, where the bulk of my experience is kind of different than landscape wise and distance from civilization wise from other areas, right? So even if you get lost anywhere in Cape Breton Island, like literally just walk down the hill to somewhere, find a brook, find a river, follow that out. That was one of the biggest things when we were growing up. It's like the first things that we were taught when we were kids was if you ever get lost in the woods, find a water source, follow it out. Because all the communities, well, except for like Lower Delaney's Brook in the middle of the Seawall Trail, are all revolve around waterways, water sources, and it all leads out to a brook, will lead to a river, which leads to the ocean generally. That's kind of one of the biggest things for navigating in the backcountry in Cape Breton. But yeah, as far as like using different techniques for using without a phone, learn a map and compass, the old trusty. Get the maps. Learn them, learn how to use a compass. You're still going to need to know how to read, like landmarks and contours and kind of have a idea of where you're at and how fast you've been walking. But nowadays you've got stuff like I started using, only last year, got a Garmin Phoenix. We were doing a hike last winter and one of the guys, I think Alec, was loading waypoints into his watch. At my house. I think it was when we went up to, went up for the first trip last February. And he was loading waypoints into the watch. And I'm like, oh man, I need to get one of those. And ever since then, I use this for everything from mapping, for training purposes. But it's got like the one I have has a map feature on it. And you can probably get other smartwatches that have similar features. But what this does is also, I'm in the middle of trying to figure out how to link it with Gaia Maps. I think that's how Alec puts in his waypoints into his watch. And then you can use that, and you can just kind of like, it'll take you from one waypoint to another waypoint. And it also shows you kind of contour lines. You can track how far you've gone, what bearing you're going. It's got a compass built in, all that sort of stuff. And the battery lasts like a really, really long time. You will, however, if you're doing like, you know, 5 days or like more, if you're using it consistently for like more than two, I would suggest bringing an extra battery pack, but it charges off very little power. But yeah, Garmin Map and Compass is like old faithful, but yeah, that's the Garmin is like my number one recommendation for anything now, I'd say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Shout out to Chase and Colleen, who hooked us up with what was the thing you bought at Mech?
What do I buy at Mech? Oh, the InReach.
GPS messenger.
Yeah, I didn't actually have, that's another thing too, that I tried to get the Garmin InReach, the one up from this one. This was the Mini. We acquired the Mini because we used to use the Spot device when we would guide backcountry trips. However, we don't have access to that Spot device anymore. So we went out and bought, I went to get the, I think it's called the Explorer. It's the one that's like a GPS screen. It gives weather reports, all that sort of stuff. They are quite pricey. However, this Mini, you can pre-program text messages and responses, and it'll send, you kind of do it online. I just made the account the other day for the trip upcoming, and I'm going to have to test it out next week. And you can send text messages, check-ins, all that sort of stuff to people. And it links up with your phone as well. I think there's an app and you can use like text through your phone and stuff through GPS, through the Garmin service.
So moving on, we have from Larabeth Walker. Two-part question. A, what kind of alcohol in what format to bring on a multi-day hike?
Yeah.
And B, advice on layering and products, must-haves that maybe have become obvious lifesavers to us.
Well, there's like three parts of that question. And I think we have like another one from Noemi. I'm looking at the listener here.
Yep.
She was asking stuff about, did she? No. Anyways, I think there's another question there about layering. Oh, layering up. No, from Ashley George. Shout out to Ashley. So let's talk about the booze thing first. It depends on what you want, realistically. I mean, if you want bang for your buck, if you're going backcountry for a couple of days, just bring a bottle of whiskey. Fireball is the kind of go-to for the crew. However, I usually, if I take anything, normally I try to save as much weight as possible so my bag doesn't weigh 200 pounds, because I'm usually lugging camera gear with me and battery packs and all kinds and food for multiple days. So I haven't really...
Plastic bottle? Plastic bottle would be key.
Yeah.
Over carrying glass for 5 days.
Yeah. Imagine that smashing. You know, you hike it for 2 days. You're like, I really want a whiskey at camp. And the next thing you take your backpack off and you smash it. Imagine if you took it off and you smashed it like as you took the backpack off just to get it. And you heard it smash.
You'd be wringing it out of your clothes.
Yeah. But that's my opinion is to just bang for buck. You don't need to bring a 2-4. Like hike a 2-4 backcountry, like that's ridiculous. We've done it, but it's ridiculous. But yeah, hard booze, small plastic bottle is the best. And then the best plastic bottle you can use is a water bottle once done. Well, I mean, you can use anything as a water bottle, but it's less garbage to pack out, and you can use it for a water bottle too. So what's the next part of that question? Layering.
Advice on layering and products like must-haves that have become like clutch, you know.
So layering, I used to suffer for years because I didn't want to upgrade any of my gear at all. I used the same stuff for decades, and then Yeah, then I just bit the bullet and finally upgraded everything years ago to pretty much all Gore-Tex stuff. So that is the basis of my entire kit. However, I'm still trying to get used to, like, I don't keep up because the Gore-Tex or any like waterproofing, you need to like reproof it after a while. And I always do it half-assed because I'm usually forget about it and do it right before a trip. So it doesn't really work that well. So layering up the biggest thing and what, especially say, let's talk about this trip in the winter that we're doing. Layering up is like a lifesaver when you're doing any of these winter backcountry trips, because you don't want to wear too much clothes. You essentially want to start cold. And this comes with trial and error. You have to kind of go out and test stuff and test different layering techniques, what works, what doesn't for your body type. I run extremely hot. So pretty much all I wear in like minus 20 is a shell with, I might have a down vest, like a little thin mid-layer down vest on, and then one 100% merino wool shirt. Usually a turtleneck. And then I have a merino wool buff, merino wool pants, Gore-Tex shell. And that keeps me warm because you're lugging around 40, 50 pounds in your back. However, if you're just like skiing, snowshoeing for the day, you might wear a thicker mid layer. It just really comes down to your body type and what works for you. But essentially, the steps are outer shell, which breaks the wind, keeps you dry. You want like a Gore-Tex type material. That's my recommendation. A mid layer, so fleece, something warm. Like I have a Stanfield's merino wool kind of like pullover shirt. It's like polyester and merino wool. And then I have like 100% merino wool base layer on right now. But yeah, so shell, break the wind, keep you dry, mid layers like insulating, and then your base layer kind of wicks away the moisture. And using merino wool, I just keep saying merino wool, tell everybody that, because that is like my go-to and it helps.
I think it's important to note too that when it comes to merino, you can sometimes get away with merino blends. But if you're going to be out there for a few days, you want 100% merino. And, you know, it's not cheap, but there are some cheaper options. Like you could try Poshmark or Depop and buy something secondhand.
Yeah.
Or even you can go to Decathlon or Mech and you can buy 100% merino gear that, you know, is significantly cheaper than going out and buying Helly Hansen merino gear or whatever, right?
Yeah, I think Mech was my go-to because I have like a turtleneck. It's literally all holes now. It's more holes than shirt.
And the whole elbows are hanging out of it.
Yeah, I refuse to give it. I've had that. So I paid $30 for that thing 10 years ago maybe, and I had it in every... when I worked offshore, I dove with it every day. It got after the dive, it got put in industrial washer with whatever industrial cleaners and everything they blast it with, high heat thing. It lasted probably hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of washes. I still use it these days, not in the wintertime anymore because it's too holy, but in the summertime, you get a little breeze coming through those holes, keeps you nice and fresh. But yeah, like Mech, I think now they're roughly, I think they're $60-$70 for a merino wool, 100% merino wool. The Stanfields is around like $90-$100. But yeah, like the, a big thing is price, and people shy away from the gear that's kind of like more on the higher end. They think, do they need it? Let me tell you from experience that when you're in like 120 kilometer hour winds, it's half raining, half snowing, and you're sitting underneath a tree trying to get shelter to figure out how you're going to set your tent up in this wind and slate and rain, and you're dry, and you're comfortable, you're not thinking about how much that shirt cost you.
Absolutely. And when it comes down to the blends too, like sometimes, again, you can get away with it, but I don't even ever chance it with socks. If it's a blend sock, I don't bother. I'll wear them at home and stuff like that. But when we go out on these trips, it's 100% wool socks for sure.
Yep. Okay. And then the go-to products?
And products. Yeah. And just like products that might have saved our lives or whatever.
Or
at least made the day.
Yeah. I was thinking about talking to somebody the other day about this. At Mech, they sell these packing cubes. Shouts out to Anika Phillips, by the way. Show me these things. You can buy them in kits or single packing cubes. And I like them because they I think there's three colorways. And so I have a different one, which is a different color, and it's different things in it. So my yellow one is all my coffee maker, my collapsible kettle, my cutlery, all that sort of stuff. My cookware is in the yellow one. My black one or gray one is like all my food that I have with me. So I know by color codes, like that one's this, that one's this. And then I have a red one, which I use for clothing and stuff. But it's a really, they're meant for going in backpacks and packing up stuff. So that one is like a time saver too. And you just have everything in one thing. You just rip it out of your bag. You know, that's what it is. You pull it out, you hang it in a tree, you get your stuff out, you start cooking, put it back. Everything's there. What other stuff? What stuff do you have that is like a go-to that saved you in a clutch?
So I do a lot of coffee runs to waterfalls in the winter. I like to just take a day trip out, go to waterfall, make coffee. Now I use isobutane, which doesn't really work well in the cold.
Yeah.
But I usually crack a hand warmer and put it in with my gas as I hike, and that keeps the gas warm.
Yeah.
So when I pull it out, it runs perfect. Another thing is waterproof bags for everything. Doesn't even necessarily need to be waterproof, but should be water resistant, like a large freezer bag or something like that. It will make your life a lot easier when everything you own isn't soaking wet. you know, cause we can't be so mindful towards our pack. We can't rely on the zippers on our pack to keep everything, perfectly dry. Right.
Yeah.
But if we double bag everything, then it seems to work really well for me anyway.
Yeah.
I always bring two extra pairs of socks in case I need to cut one up, which happened last year when my ankle shredded and I needed an extra buffer on the inside. I needed like, you know, the sweatbands you wear, they used to wear on your wrists.
Yeah.
I needed to make one of those for each one of my boots to keep my boot off my ankle.
Yeah.
And, so I was really happy that I brought more than one extra pair of socks. Trying to think what else. Oh, I mean, the boys swear by the powdered Gatorade and they make hot Gatorade with it.
Oh, yes.
That is next level. Yeah, next level.
You might be listening to this going, hot Gatorade. I did the same thing. I did the same thing until halfway through a Kedgy trip, and I had it, and I was like, buddy, this thing is like, it's on the level with my nightly powdered hot chocolate before bed. Like, I might switch it up here and there.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Other things that have been lifesavers.
Well, I'll tell you what, one thing I got right on the top of my head, and this is going in, I wrote a blog, so I've been writing all these different blogs over the last 2 weeks while we're getting ready for this trip, and just different things that I think that would be useful for people to use as reference material, which will be up hopefully in the next couple of weeks. But one of the things is duct tape, taking duct tape and wrapping it around your water bottles, like doing a, you know, four or five wraps around the water bottle in a couple different areas around your knife sheath, around if you're using like white fuel canisters, excuse me, or like isobutane, anything that you can wrap the duct tape around, because it just helps out so much. Like, you can just fix things with it. That's what I've used. I've used it to fix poles. What else? Poles, snowshoes. Holes in tents, rips and down sleeping bag. My sleeping bag's full of duct tape right now, so I probably should invest and get a new one. But yeah, so I use it all the time. And then I have also a little pack. You can get these like zip tie packs. And I have like a little repair kit hidden away in my backpack. And the reason I put the duct tape on all the different things is because it just saves room. I don't have to lug a roll of duct tape or have it in my bag, and it's always there taking up space. These things are going to be hanging off the backpack or off like a knife sheath to be hanging off your belt. It won't take any space in your backpack. It's not going to take that much weight. But yeah, just having that little repair kit, because, oh, and there was another time, I think you were with me, when we went to Second Forks for that trip, and I forgot the tent. tent. And then I had to take a bivy, which is another thing, emergency bivy. You can buy them at Canadian Tire for like $10. And I used that, cut it in half, and used the zip ties, duct tape, and made like a weighted down
little shelter
tarp, because it was going to rain out, and I slept in a hammock. My feet got soaked. But anyways, it saved the day. Either that or I'd be on the ground soaking wet.
The other thing is, too, if you're a photographer, videographer, or you're just new to that sort of realm and you plan on taking camera gear with you for a few days, is hand warmers for your batteries. Keeping those batteries acclimatized is really important. There's nothing worse than when you get like a day into a trip and you have no batteries and you have to still lug your camera and gear for another 4 days. So,
yeah.
all right. Let's move on.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much, that's all on the top of my head. If anything else comes up, we'll just talk to it.
We have camping hacks on a blog post.
Yep, that's what I've got coming up too. Like I was just talking about it, blog post. But yeah, we'll get to the next one, and then maybe I'll jump back to some blog post topics.
Okay,
go over that.
So this is from Noemi. Listening to the latest podcast about waterfalls, we were talking about topographic maps, and she was curious to know her thoughts about on any good apps, how you access them. And it would be useful to plan some backcountry ski trips. So maybe if she could use some tips on that.
Mm-hmm. So we spoke on some of that earlier. About navigating. Just 1 second. I was just looking at trying to get that blog piled up here. So about good apps. Well, if you want, okay, so let's speak on maps. So if you want maps, like topographical maps, the map store in Halifax is your best bet for getting them. That's where I always buy them when I'm in. But as far as the apps, we've spoken that earlier. So I'd say Gaia, CalTopo, it's CalTopo.com. That one is the one I've been primarily using. Mr. Dave Green from Greener Adventures in Halifax gave that suggestion to me about a year and a bit ago. And that is what we use to map out like the Marguerite River trip. We look to plan any routes or new trips. I usually map it in CalTopo, and you can save your maps and different routes, and you can share that map to other people, and it'll give you waypoints. You can insert your campsites, all that sort of stuff on there, and then you can print off the map and take it with you. It's a really good tool for planning routes when you're going anywheres, because you can measure like distances between things. You can overlay different map, different maps, like topographical maps or better resolution Google Earth type maps. I don't know what they're called, but you can layer them on top of one another.
Like satellite maps.
Yeah. So you can see, like, we were mapping a thing out in one of the rivers here in Cape Breton, and I was trying to find out waterfalls, if there was any big rapids or waterfalls and where those were. So what I was doing was I layered like a general topographical map that you would get at this map store in Halifax, and then I would pull down the transparency so it would overlay all of the contour lines with the actual satellite imagery. And then you can click different features on it, so it will show you the grade in color scale. So it'll show you how steep that grade is, where those contour lines are, and if it's in a certain like color zone, you know that that's going to be rock or sheer rock face. So you can kind of plan your routes around that, and it gives you so much information, and it's free. And that's CalTopo. That's the one that I would recommend using.
CalTopo.
Yeah,
I like to use Canada Topo, but I use that for like directional routing. Wouldn't be as good as CalTopo for planning cross-country ski routes.
Yeah, let's be clear about that. The CalTopo I just use for mapping potential routes or doing research into where I'm going. Canada Topo exactly. is an app that is on your phone that you can track and save waypoints. So I have a huge library of waypoints to like cool campsites that I've pinpointed, different features that I then come home and I write in a journal with the GPS coordinates and stuff. So if you're walking in the woods and you come across like some random cabin in the middle of nowheres, like we did when we did that hike on the Shady Camp River,
yep,
I just pinned that and went home, took the coordinates off it, and then I put it on in a notepad with the actual coordinates of where that was at.
So next question from Ashley George. We love Ashley George. Again, gear recommendations for winter camping and how to layer for the cold.
So we answered the layer in the cold one earlier. So the general basis of this, and I forgot to mention before, we also have a blog post that I wrote last year that kind of covered how to layer in the cold and techniques that we use to stay warm. For instance, like I said before, starting cold, you want to start cold, like freezing cold, and then you'll end up warming up and then your body will self-regulate after a while. But as far as gear recommendations for winter camping, it really all depends on where and what you're doing with it, right? So if you're going up in the highlands, up in the barrens, and being in that with a lot of potential for exposure, you want to make sure that you're buying the proper equipment. So stuff that has the capacity and built for handling wind and rain and all that's whatever that up in the highlands will throw at you, because the weather can turn like on a dime up there. But when you're doing any like down here in the lowlands or outside Halifax camping, you generally just want a nice winter four season tent. But if you don't have access to that, if you have a three season one, just make sure that the fly is a decent fly. It's not like beat up by the sun that's going to rip apart in the wind, which has happened to me before. Make sure that you've been taking care of that fly. Because over time, the sun will beat it and make it so brittle, which is what happened to mine. But I
just want to add, too, that so for layering, most of us have, you know, we have our merino base layer, our merino socks. Our outer shell is usually Gore-Tex or something close to that. So, you know, Columbia makes a dry tech. It's not as good, but it'll do in a pinch. And then our mid layers are usually a down puffy,
but like a small,
like a micro puffy.
Yeah. Like a small mid layer one. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And fleece. Some of us have a wool sweater as well that we carry. So it's good to have the option for those. And, even if you don't wear them, they make a great pillow.
Yeah. So, and then as far as recommendations for gear, okay, so you're talking about a tent. However, when you're doing any winter stuff, this is, you want to be comfortable and stay warm. So this is how it works when we get to base camp. We get to camp, we all break down our gear, we start getting the tents, the holes we're sleeping in, whatever, ready. But the first thing we do is rip out a puffer jacket, like Canary just mentioned. We have a mid layer, like a very light, like I have a down Arc'teryx vest, which I use during the day. When I get to camp, I pull out a big, it's like a 700 fill North Face puffer jacket with a hood. And so what that does, that's going to keep me warm. During the day, you're wearing a light, you know, a mid layer, you're wearing a base layer and a shell because you want to be cold when you start because you're just going to heat up and sweat and you don't want to sweat. So you want to be neutral. But when you get to camp, you're just hanging around a nice, comfortable, big puff jacket. You can buy the Mech Tremblant jackets, I believe they're called. They're not as big and puffy as they once used to be, but apparently they're still really good puffer jackets. And the number one item I would recommend anybody get, booties, base camp booties. So these are synthetic. I think you can get down ones too. Mech sells them. I think they're around $60 now. They like doubled in 10 years. It's crazy.
They are clutch though.
Yeah. So when you get to camp, you take off your boots, put on a nice warm, dry pair of socks, put on these down booties, and they will keep your feet nice and toasty the whole evening. They're amazing. And they're much.
The other thing I just want to say about the puffers is, you know, Woods makes a really great puffer jack, yep. micro puff. That's the one I own. I didn't spend a fortune on it. It worked out really well. I really like it. I can also say that, from talking to some other folks that do winter camping, Woods makes a four season tent. It's around $250 for a two person and around $300 for a three person. And I'm told that they're made really well.
Interesting.
So not breaking the bank for, either one of those products.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
What about stoves?
Yeah, that was another thing I just threw on this list just to talk about briefly because I got asked that a few times. So when you're talking about winter camping, isobutane, which is, if you're unfamiliar what I'm talking about, isobutane, those are the big canisters where you get like the MSR makes the pocket rockets, a little stove, the twist-on ones. You can buy them all over the place, like $10 a canister or whatever. Even though it says four season mix, it is not technically, it still work, but it doesn't work very well in cold weather, even though it says four season mix. I always buy four season mix no matter what, but yeah, it just doesn't work as well, and it'll take forever. There is a little trick of putting in an additional water for it immediately to get a little bit of pressure. I can't remember how that works. I'm asking a buddy of mine who showed us how to do it. It was a little trick because it was working really slowly, and he's like, "Now I got this hack for it." So it's going in that hacking blog that I'm going to post about. But for winter camping, I highly recommend using white fuel. MSR makes it. It's called Super Fuel, I think. You buy the cans at Mech. You can order them online. We're going to start selling it from the shop as well because white fuel burns a lot hotter in cold temperatures. It's a lot more efficient. However, the stoves are a little bit more expensive. I think the Whisper Light that I use is around $200. But they have a new one, which we just got, is called the Whisper Light Universal, I think. Yeah, Universal. And it has the ability to fluctuate between isobutane, white fuel, kerosene, camping fuel, like all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So, but as far as stoves, so wintertime, I would highly recommend if you're doing any backcountry winter stuff, invest in a white fuel or liquid fuel stove. And then summertime, it really doesn't matter what you use. You can use isobutane, white fuel, kerosene, whatever.
And like I said before, if you only have isobutane and you're only going out for a night or you're only going for a day trip, pack some hand warmers, keep the fuel warm. And it'll go a long way for when you go to use it, but not sustainable for a multi-day trip for sure.
Well, we've done it. But you know that old thing that your grandma used to tell you about the water's not going to boil if you stare at it? Well, I mean, it kills time staring at water to wait for it to boil, but you're there for hours. Yeah, it'll get you through, but it's not recommended.
So we're down to camping hacks. Tips and tricks. From Alex McLean. If you have your post-supper tea in a bowl you just ate out of, then you can skip doing the dishes.
Yep.
That's a pretty good hack.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's a great. I think I saw him. We're talking about that. He did a hike with us in October, I think, or September. And I think he was doing that then. And like another thing too is like if you're packing food, to make sure you're packing like some dry food that you can cook in bag because it's super easy to clean up as well. That's another good little tip. Instead of taking stuff like Sidekicks and everything that you're going to make a mess, packing in food bags enables you to just kind of like be real lean and not have to pack in a bunch of pots, pans, and be doing dishes all the time.
So Happy Yak is really good for that. They have a lot of instant meals.
Yep, Happy Yak. To Camp's Cook Cache actually is trial running. We're testing it out on the trip in a couple weeks. Their cook and bag option, they've just started testing out for next summer. So Camp's Cook Cache is, I always butchered the name.
Camp Cook's Cache.
It's a tongue twister.
You know, remember you remember when we were on that trip, the canoe trip, and we ate the beans?
Oh yeah,
those are the best. Those are the best beans I ever ate in my life.
Whiskey peach beans. Yep. Shouts out to those guys.
Those are delicious.
Yeah. So we're going to be trial running some of their cook and bag options. Then you got like the Backpacker's Pantry. Some of them, it's kind of like give or take. I don't know. Some of them are good. Some of them aren't. Alpine Air is another one that you can buy. I think Cabela's sells like the 7-day packs, so it's, I forget how many meals it's in that, but it's pretty cheap, but it's always sold out. Mech sells their stuff as well. Their three cheese enchilada is pretty good, but my go-to has been Happy Ack. It's one, they're Canadian, they're from Quebec, and they're really easy to deal with. They helped us out 2 years ago in a pinch when we were getting food for a trip across the islands. But yeah, they're cooking a bag, pack it up, and you throw it in your Ziploc bag, and away you go. What else we
got?
So
the next one is from Karen McKenzie. She packs her sleeping bag into a Sobeys bag, RIP. No Sobeys bags anymore. But she packs her sleeping bag into a plastic bag for extra dry protection.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that. A lot of people do that. And not so much Sobeys bags, but like garbage bags. Not like the hefty bags, the thin or the super thick, like industrial size. Even those would probably work good. But just in plastic bag, just for an extra. It depends on like the backpack you're using. Some of the backpacks now, I have an old Arc'teryx one, which was real water repellent. It is not anymore. So sometimes that's what I will do. But yeah, that's a pretty good one. I've seen that done many, many times before.
So I've got a couple.
Yeah, give it a go. And then I got this blog. I'll go over some off the blog.
All right. So if you need an extra water repellent on some of your gear,
yep.
Scotchgard is great for that. So you do a single coat of Scotchgard and you wait 2 hours and then you do a second coat of it. It's just a spray. You can buy it anywhere. You can buy it at Canadian Tire, Home Depot, or whatever. And it works as a really great water repellent. It beads the water, so it's not going to work on something that's porous. But if what you have is porous, it will prevent mold from growing within the pores of that. The other thing is, so I tend to shoot myself in the foot when it comes to preparing for trips like this. So I'll often go on a high protein lean diet and get into shape and work out a lot before we do one of these things. And then when we go and do the trip, I'm eating carbs every day and sugar every day, and I could shit through the eye of a needle. And so what I have researched into this recently to try and figure out how I can combat that issue, and adding some extra fiber to your diet, so some fiber tablets will tidy things up a little bit and make things a little bit easier on your stomach.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, fun. I usually go the other way. I'm usually zipped up tight and it takes me forever. But that's enough of that talk.
A lot of poop talk this
well,
week.
Whatever. I mean, that's how everybody deals with when they're doing any of this stuff. So, but
everybody
yeah.
Everybody poops.
But, that on top of that too, noon tablets are a good one, like, electrolyte tablets to get, when you're going on any trip. I never used to use them. And then last year I started stealing them from Alec on trips, and, it's been kind of a go-to, especially when you're doing a lot of like in the summer stuff. Like when we did Seawall Trail, yeah, I didn't do anything active for 2 months. I was just running the business of the campground and stuff. So a lot of coffee, a lot of beers, and then hiking Seawall, with a extremely heavy kit on, did me in, but those were lifesaver. So yeah, like to jump in this blog post that I was writing, I'm waiting on a couple other things, clarifications from people. However, I spoke on the duct tape on the water bottles and that sort of stuff and fuel canisters. One recently that I kind of like brought back that I haven't used in a long time was wrapping your feet in plastic bags so your feet or your boots don't freeze when you're doing any multi-day winter trip. The biggest thing, you've done the winter trip. And if you're like, did you have any issues with your boots freezing? Because we didn't do this last year.
No, I didn't have any issues with that.
Yeah. So it depends on the like my feet sweat a lot. Like normally they just generally do. So, which is why all my shoes are disgusting. This one has been a hack that I've used for a while. It's like what, you know, when you're kids and your feet, your boots are wet, and your parents put on your a plastic bag over your feet in your boots so your feet don't get wet. Well, this is like kind of reverse from that. You wear like a thin sock, and then you put a bag like Sobeys bag, co-op bag, anything plastic over your foot, and then you put your merino wool sock and you put that in your boot. And what it does, it's kind of like the same as if you're building a house, the vapor barrier, right? Keeps the vapor barrier on the outside. Well, this keeps the vapor on your foot. And you'll think, oh, well, won't my feet get wet? Yes, but they'll also stay warm because your boots are dry. You've got an insulating layer on your boot. And then once you get to camp, you just take those boots off. This is when you're switching over to your booties. You take off the socks, the wet one that's underneath the plastic. That one, unfortunately, folks, you're going to have to sleep with on your shoulders, chest, crotch. It will dry by the morning. So a little bit of being uncomfortable before you get to go to bed. However, you'll wake up with a dry sock in the morning. So that's one hack. When you're winter camping, using water bottles as heaters. So generally, if we're doing any backcountry stuff in the Highlands, we try to set up camps around water sources. However, because of the amount of snow sometimes that are up in the Highlands, you can be sitting on top of 20 feet of snow, on top, that's the water source where your camp's going to be at. So you're going to have to boil water. So when you're boiling water, you can fill up the water bottles every night. So generally we'll make sure everybody drinks a shit ton of water at night. You fill up both liter water bottles and you can throw those in your tent or sleeping bag, to stay warm in the evening. You know, you've probably heard people doing this with heating up rocks and putting rocks in, wrapping around in towels and putting them in their bottom of the sleeping bags and stuff like that. The same deal.
It's nice too, putting a hot thermos in your sleeping bag with you.
Yeah. Cuddle
it. It's real nice.
Yeah. Same idea. Another tip for your hands, for your gloves. If you're doing any, winter multi-day trips and you tend to sweat, use latex gloves. Or like, I had a buddy last year that used like the fisherman plastic rubber gloves. And inside you're kind of like light gloves that you'd be wearing during the day. And that just has the same idea. It helps insulate your hand for one, but it keeps the moisture away from your gloves. So your gloves aren't going to get wet and freeze, because it's a pain in the ass to try to get anything, thawed and dried when you're doing winter multi-day trips. Another tip, invest in base camp booties. That's what we talked about earlier. I won't get into that again. One of the biggest tips that I can give anybody that is doing any backpacking is to pack your kit in the order that you need it. And this is specifically, I'm speaking on winter camping for the most part, because time is of the essence. You want to be as quick as possible. You don't want to lose heat. You want to retain heat. So like I said, when you get to base camp, you put down your backpack. The first thing you pull out of your bag, how I pack it is I take off the top pouch. My down jacket is there immediately. So I pull that off, I take my shell off, put my down jacket on. I have my nice heavy gloves that I can have ready to access. Like I've got Gore-Tex mech gloves, which are crazy. They're ridiculously expensive, but they are a night saver. Night saver? What? Lifesaver. A night saver.
Watching too much Mandalorian.
Oh, I was watching Boba Fett today. yeah. So, and then like, that just means having like, when you're going for the day, when you're packing up stuff for the day, you want to think about how you want to access your food. So having snacks readily available, top of your backpack, in your jacket pocket, leg pocket, wherever. You want your water available, of course, stuff like that. So just think of how you want to access your stuff, to speed up the entire process, to save time of rooting through your backpack when you don't need to. It's also the same too with packing your tent up. So in the winter, Anytime. I pack the tent up. So when you roll the tent out, it's in the order that you have it. So when you roll it out, the top one's your fly. I have my fly on top and all my pegs and poles and everything. So I can move that off to the side and it's my tent. Or, and then your, what do you call it? Your little mat footprint that's underneath it if you need it. So my winter tents all have footprints. So, yeah, everything's there. You just roll it out. It's ready to go. You just spread it open. You pop your poles in, pop it up, put your canopy on top, and you're good to go. And then another tip too, if you're doing any winter stuff and you have enough snow, dig a base camp kitchen, which is pretty fun because you dig this little like, you know, half, or horseshoe, little kind of like sit-in area, and you have where your stove's at, and everybody's kind of like looking at one another, and it creates kind of like a social atmosphere. And if you have enough snow, dig it deep enough, you get wind protection as well.
A couple of things I just want to note is that if you're on a multi-day trip and you build a fire, don't warm up by the fire. Use the fire to dry out some of your gear, but you don't want to have to reacclimatize. So try to stay away from the fire. Try to stay warm using your gear, not artificial source. The other thing is, you know, to go over some tools or some useful gear that I found. Thermarest. Clutch. You need that layer of insulation, which I forgot it on the first trip, and Alec was such a gentleman that he gave me his and slept without one.
Yeah, whatever was left of his.
Yeah. Glove liners. So I have a set of Gore-Tex gloves from Combi. They also make a glove liner that goes with those, so it fits in perfectly. And just that extra layer gives like a radial buffer for air to sit in, to keep your fingertips warm. The other things are usually one of us carries a plastic shovel, one of us carries a metal shovel. Or like a mountaineering shovel. And then usually one of us has a pocket knife and we all, a multi-tool. And then we all carry a knife. Because, you know, somebody's going to need that tool, one of those tools every single day. And you're going to use your knife every day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess like this whole podcast, we're talking more specifically about winter because it's winter now and we're getting geared up for a winter trip. And there's actually a huge, a massive, massive like winter camping, like interest now, I guess is what I'm going to get at. It's kind of crazy. It's just like stuff like we grew up doing that no one else wanted to do. And like, I look at videos, like I'll just be on stuff that pops up in my YouTube algorithm and it'll be like a guy camping in Germany and there's just ambient audio and it's him setting up his tent for like 45 minutes and there's like 500,000 views. No talking.
Yeah.
It's this guy setting up a tent with wind and they're like, yeah. The caption's like camping in a windstorm with rain. Fucking 500,000 views.
It's crazy.
It's nuts. So,
you know, we talked about it before is that, you know, winter camping really puts things into perspective for you because, like, I always hated the winter. I hated the snow. I hated sleet and ice. I hated the cold. I hated all of it. Until we did that first trip last year. That was the first time in my life that really put what cold is into perspective, what suffering is into perspective for me. And, you know, where it's type 2 fun, it doesn't feel so good while you're doing it. But when you complete that, it really gives you a new perspective on, you know, what you can endure. You know, you wake up in the morning and you got to go to work and it's -1 degrees. You feel like wearing a t-shirt. Because we were just on the top of a mountain last week in -20, and you know, so there's a real psychological and benefit to the ego there.
Yeah, and it's not as far out of reach for people as they might think. And all this stuff is all about just pushing, not pushing yourself, but gaining a little bit of experience by trial and error, because that's all this shit is trial and error to figure out, you know, what you're comfortable with, where your comfort zone is at, trying to push it a little bit and elevate that experience level, like getting out and just trial running gear, like trying to layer up properly, see if that works. I went on a, like a 12K snowshoe trip up the mountain by my place with a full rucksack on just to make sure everything was working, and meant to go film a YouTube, a little tutorial about the hacks, and didn't heed your warning about warming up batteries. And, you know, usually my batteries are pretty good. Anyways, everything sucked dry. I was like, anyways, I might post it. I might go shoot another one. But I hiked 12K just to do that.
Yeah.
And it didn't
work.
You
know, lithium requires that there be a fluid in that battery. And when that fluid isn't fluid anymore, the battery doesn't hold a charge. Mm,
yeah. So, yeah. But I mean, you know, trial and error. I didn't bring that stuff. I didn't really think that far ahead. I was out of practice. So what I'm saying is just get out there and explore and do this stuff and try it yourself and see how you feel. Like what I tell people about winter camping, some people, you know, they're like, I'd love to go on a trip, but I don't think I'd ever be able to do that backcountry stuff, not knowing, you know, the environment, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, all you need to do is go outside in your backyard and try camping in the winter to see if how it's going to work for you, and to gain a little bit of confidence, and through trial and error you'll figure what works for you and what doesn't work for you, and then you might be able to push that boundary just a little bit further and further and further, and the next winter you're coming on this trip, who knows.
I just want to note too that I think we're going to have Denis on the podcast soon, and he does a map and compass course. So maybe something we'll think about for the future with regards to navigating backcountry, navigating through map and compass. Maybe we'll think about putting on one of those workshops and having Denis host it. So just stay tuned, and we'll keep you guys updated on that.
Pitching ideas. There we go. Not even formulated plans. That's it.
Gonna hold just you pitching to them live.
Oh yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I mean, that's pretty much, I mean, that's all the stuff that we had suggested. That's a couple extra things we threw in there. Yeah, this one was just a fun, kind of podcast to do. We've got in the next couple weeks, we've got Jay Rodding, that we're going to go up to the, Red Cove Wilderness Cabins, which is where Jay runs her business. She owns the cabins and owns Highland Bow and Arrow, which if you saw our documentary, we featured her in there. That's the Cabot Trail documentary on YouTube. I don't know if you saw it. You should go watch it.
You can also check out East Coast Kids on Bell Community Access TV. Liam and Lucas, we did an episode for them there, and it was, they were really, really great.
Yeah. So we're going to have Jay on, and then we're going to hop over to Inganish and, have the women from the Periwinkle Cafe on. So that's upcoming in the next 2 weeks. So you'll see one of these episodes be a launch while we're on our, across the Highlands trip. We don't have service. I'm just going to automate that to come out. So, you know, but yeah, so that's what's coming up the next couple weeks. Then we're going to probably do Denis after that, hopefully. You got anything else to say?
I got nothing else to say, man.
Okay, good, good, good. I need to eat some food. This is Living Life Intently. Thank you guys for listening. We always love to hear feedback from anybody that listens to the podcast. Any stuff that you guys want covered, we can jump on, do different podcasts similar than this. We can have guests on. One suggestion before we leave is the search and rescue suggestion. To have somebody from search and rescue on, there was somebody that was suggested. I think it's the same guy that does the wilderness first aid course. So I thought about reaching out to him anyway. So maybe we'll line something like that up. Who knows? But if you got suggestions for podcasts, let us know. Just email, what email? Lee@livelifeintense.com, I guess.
Feel free. You can reach either one of us on socials.
Yep.
If you have any more questions about gear, or winter or summer or whatever, backcountry, whatever. If you have any questions, you reach out to one of us on socials, Live Life in Tents or Sounds of Fire.
Sounds good. Well, guys, we'll catch you next time. I'm going to go watch some more true crime, whatever. And yeah, we'll catch you next time on with Jay Rodney. Okay.
See you later.
Peace.